part of Madison on Addict. Thank you for taking the meeting, Dave, and thanks, Simon, for the share before. It was great to hear your enthusiasm, and actually there was loads of things that he shared that I was going to share as well. So he's not 10 minutes off. You know, I still, you know, I'm sure you can hear in my voice that, you know, I still get so nervous. And when Arinda asked me to come here, my first thought is always, could you not get someone better? You know, could you, you know, not someone else, but someone that's better than I am. And I guess that is one of the things that's kind of at the root of my addiction, is that I'm not enough. I'm not enough. And I can never get enough. And that's pretty much been a driving force in my life. And if you're new, welcome. That was the other thing that I wanted to say. When I was new, I heard, you know, they kind of say in step one, we didn't kind of come in willing, brimming over with honesty. And I just feel like now, when I think back, you know, I feel like I was kind of kicked in the door and arrived and just sort of thought, well, you know, all these people are so fucking happy to be here. You know, what's all that about? And they speak in cliches, you know. Just for today, first things first, let go, let God, you know. And I was like, I'm so fucking arrogant, still am, and pompous or whatever, grandiose, whatever the word is, that I thought, I'm a relatively intelligent person, you know, I don't need to speak in cliches, but I thought, I'll keep coming back, and let go, let God, I quite like that, you know, that I don't have to worry about stuff, that I can actually just hand it over, I quite like that, let go, let God, and then just for today, you know, oh, that's, you know, really is just for today, I don't actually have to worry about tomorrow, I just have to, like, concern myself with today, I quite like that as well, actually. But it did kind of, I don't know, you know, when I see newcomers now, I try and think about what it was like for me when I arrived, you know, and I absolutely, it took a long time for me to, you know, Simon talked about identification, identifying what people were saying. I identified, but also it took a long time for me to kind of accept that people identified with me. And when it was a very powerful thing when I shared and people said, I felt that, you know, and I've been through that and this is what I've done. But, you know, they tell me what they did. And they, you know, they tell me what they did to get out of whatever they were thinking or feeling or... Sorry, a bit distracted. And I think, well, I'm not going to do that. I don't need to do that. I'm going to, you know, do this on my own. And, you know, and apologies if I kind of jump around when I'm doing this as well, because I've kind of started overnight at the point that I came into Narcotics Anonymous. But, you know, I did it my way, you know, and my way was particularly painful for me. And my desire, you know, this is not an enjoyable thing, you know. The reason why I sit here is because my life has changed, you know. I feel like I've had two lives, you know, where I expected one. My relationships have changed in my life. And it's down to coming to Narcotics Anonymous, and my desire is actually just to be able to communicate that to, you know, anyone who's interested in working the 12 steps. sorry, I kind of got blank. But one thing that Simon said was that he didn't do it alone, and that's been a really important thing for me to learn as well. You know, I did fucking everything on my own. You know, I didn't want anyone else. other people did not behave in the way that I wanted them to behave. They pissed me off, you know, I couldn't control them, you know. So relationships, any kind of relationships with my parents, with my family, with friends, you know, were all really quite painful. And I decided at a very young age, when I was really anxious child, always worried about stuff. My dad was an alcoholic, and my mum was very concerned with my brother because my brother was very sick when he was a child. And I felt that I had to kind of run the family. I don't know why I got that idea, how I got that idea, but I felt that I did. And that I was the strong, you know, I was a very, you know, the strongest member of the family, the person that had to kind of keep everybody up. And so I decided really, and also, this has been quite important, was that I actually was seeking a spiritual path. I was seeking something spiritual when I was young, and I did kind of have a desire to have a spiritual path. I remember that, and I remember being really, really disappointed in God when I, you know, went to a church or went to, you know, the synagogue, because my family are Jewish, because I felt really judged. And I felt like I had to conform in some way or do certain things or be a certain way, you know. I was really disappointed in God. And so there I was, you know, I was on my own. And pretty much by the time I was 12, I wanted to kill myself. You know, of course I did. Because I had the weight of the world on my shoulders. And so I went from being, I was actually a really good girl, you know, I was a really good girl. I was head girl when I was 11, I was head girl in my junior school. And I completely, one of the things I've learnt about myself in recovery is that I'm a person of extremes, you know, which I'm sure people will be able to identify with. You know, I went from being a good girl to being a complete arsehole, really. You know, I just, I hit teachers at school. I used to wear my own uniform. I shaved my head. I dyed it pink. I shouted at people. I was violent. I was abusive. And they tried to help me, but I wasn't really that interested. I just thought, well, you know, I'm just doing this on my own. So when I found drugs, it was like I fell in love, you know. I fell in love because I didn't have to worry anymore. I didn't have to worry about how I felt anymore because I could control how I felt. And that was basically how I carried, you know, from the age of 14 or 15, that's how I carried on till I was, you know, till I came into recovery. You know, I wanted a surefire solution to my life. I didn't want anything to change. I didn't want anything to grow. I didn't think there was anything wrong with the way I lived my life at all, because everyone around me lived their lives like that as well, you know. But I wanted everything to be fixed. And I didn't really have that much. I mean, I did some, you know, incredible things. You know, I joined a band and I worked in the music business and it was all fantastic. And, you know, my dad carried on drinking till he died. And I was thinking today, you know, would that just have kind of happened to me had my brother and dad not died in the same year? My dad died very suddenly from cancer, but my brother died very slowly from a disease connected with the reason he was ill when he was younger. And the grief from that, and running from the grief from that, and the using that I did around that, and then consequently, just brought me to my knees quite quickly, within about sort of 3 years. I mean, it was long enough. It was incredibly painful. And the place that I kind of got to, my kind of snapshot of my step one, and the point at which I surrendered, and the place I really don't want to go back to, was a place of degradation, humiliation, abuse and terror. And I that's my, you know, whenever I think maybe I can use, you know, that's not going to happen tomorrow. If I use, that's going to happen kind of down the line. I know that, because that's where it takes me. I don't give a fuck about anyone else. I just care about what I want. And I need the program, and I need the tools of the program in order to live a life that I feel that my heart desires, but my addiction, you know, sometimes fights quite hard against. So I didn't, you know, even when I came into recovery, I came in kind of like, all right, you know, I can't use drugs, and who are these people, and, you know, why, you know, like I said, you know, why are they so happy? Why are they so happy to be here? And I didn't quite believe that they had reached the point that I had reached. And it took me, you know, it took me 2 years. It took me 2 years to surrender, to kind of going, fine, all right, I'll look at the steps, I'll get a sponsor. You know, and those 2 years were really quite unbelievably painful, and I really wouldn't recommend it to anyone. And like I said, you know, I had, like it says in step one actually, social acceptability doesn't equal recovery. You know, I had social acceptability. I didn't have recovery. I thought I knew everything. By the time I got, I was in the supermarket yesterday actually, and this woman kind of bumped into me, and then she was really apologetic, and I kind of smelt fear, you know, and it kind of brought me back, and I thought, God, I remember a time when I actually used to get a real kick out of that. I used to love to intimidate, you know, I was quite abusive and violent, and I just got what I wanted from people, and then I got, then they got out of the way, you know. And I remember just kind of getting a bit of a kick out of the fact that I just used people, you know. And all I can say about that now is that I actually really didn't feel like I knew any different. I didn't know any different. You know, I didn't know how to behave in another way. I've had to learn how to live with the program that we have here. I've had to learn how to behave. You know, my ideas, by the time I reached my rock bottom, I had three ideas, you know, on how I was going to progress in my life. Two were extreme violence towards my ex-partner, and one was to end my own life. And In the end, I tried to end my own life in front of my 10-year-old daughter. And you know what? I wish that there was something funny that I could say about that and make a joke out of that. But, you know, I was just sharing before that she's my 10-year-old daughter is now 17. She's 17 now, and she is in counselling at the moment because she's very depressed, seriously quite, you know, depressed. And I mean, that's another part of the journey. You know, there was a time, I took all of that on board as well, you know, because of my pride, you know, and I thought that was my fault that she's ended up in counselling. It's my fault that she's got depression. But so it took a long time, you know, a good few months for me to kind of take her to a professional and not try and solve the problem myself. But anyway, sorry, step two. I remember one of my first meetings was a step two meeting, and I remember it was a woman's meeting, and she was talking about a relationship and trying to sort of change the other person and actually physically banging her head against a wall, you know, and that's what it's like. I've remembered that ever since she said it, because, you know, the amount of times, not only with people but with everything, you know, that I have tried to get my result, the result that I want, despite the evidence, I find, you know, I really do have to have my nose rubbed in it before I go, all right then, fine, it's not fucking happening. Step three and step two, where, you know, we talk about our higher power, is really important, because I really needed to understand that my higher power kind of loves me, you know, wants the best for me, and doesn't judge what I'm doing. So I'm allowed to make mistakes, you know, like Simon said, you know, I'm allowed not to be perfect, and I'm not judged for that, because, you know, even kind of, whatever I am, 6.5 years in, you know, I really love giving myself a really fucking hard time not being perfect. You know, not doing everything right, not doing my recovery right. I mean, I'll find something. I used to go and see a therapist, and she said, Alison, if there's any bad feeling in the room, you'll put your hand up for it. You know, I'm kind of right there going, you know, please kick me in the head. I'm a really bad person. So, you know, the qualities of my higher power are really important. And step four took me ages. I mean, you know, it took me 2 years to write my step four. And I'm sure that there will be silent judgments going on in the room. But no, Frankie, no. Okay. But what I learned from my step four was I actually gained an understanding of why I did things and why other people do things. So I was actually, while I was writing my step four, I was a lot more forgiving around other people's behaviour. I'm not so much now, funnily enough, but at the time I was much more forgiving about other people's behaviour. And also, that, you know, the path of Narcotics Anonymous, this 12-step path, is the path that I've chosen, but it's not for everybody. And it's not for me to tell everybody else what to do either, you know? This is my business. And you know what? The more I stick to my business, you know, if people are attracted to, you know, the effect that the 12 steps has had on my life, then fantastic. And if they're not, then fantastic. You know, it's none of my business. My business is my recovery. And, you know, and I kind of understand that now. And it was tedious, my step four, you know, it was really fucking tedious. I had to write everything down, I did it in columns, and I had to write down all my sort of resentments against people, and fucking hell, there was a lot of them, you know. And I swear to God that when I came in to not, you know, when I came into NA, if someone said, you've got to write down your resentments, I haven't got any. 10. The most. 10. You know, I can't, no. You know, oh, it went on and on and on and on, and it was the same thing as well, you know. And then I kind of looked at it, and then the shame, you know, of the stuff that I'd done, and the fact that I was going to have to read this out. But it says, write it, don't think about reading it, just write it. And I wrote it. And then I read it. I read it to my sponsor in step five, and, you know, that was really important to me, because I needed someone to get to know me. You know, this is about honesty and intimacy and someone actually seeing who I am, despite the fact that, you know, I fucking hate the fact that I can't do, like I said, I can't do everything right, you know, that I don't look great all the time. And I don't mean on the outside, I mean, you know, on the, you know, in any kind of way, you know, I want to do the right thing, I want to say the right thing, I want to be the right person, I want to be in the right place, you know. And, you know, so to kind of open myself up to my sponsor and to let her see me was a really big deal. and for me. And, you know, I have to say that since then, again, you know, the effect that it's had on my life is that I'm actually more open to people seeing who I am. And I won't say that I don't care now about what people think, because I really fucking do care. I spoke to Jay on the phone earlier, and I said, and I was trying, we were trying to get to sort of know where it was, and where this place was, because it's different from when I came here before. And I said, is it near the ENO? And he said, what's the ENO? And I thought, oh my God. I said, it's the opera. And then I thought, oh my God, he thinks I'm really posh. You know, he just actually... this stuff kind of goes through my head all the time. And it's... I'm kind of so worried about what people think, but I'm getting better. You know, I'm getting better. And that's the point, you know, is that I'm getting better. And that sometimes it does feel like two steps back. I'm doing step six at the moment. I'm about halfway through step six at the moment. I wanted to lie then as well. I wanted to say I've almost finished, but, you know. No, I'm about halfway through. And, you know, my sponsor doesn't kind of tell me what to do, and sometimes I actually wish she did. But... you know, because I'm, you know, I do it really slowly, but I'm just finding out about myself. I'm actually just getting to know who I am, and getting to kind of like who I am as well. You know, getting to appreciate that, you know, I don't have to kind of pretend to be someone else or like things that I don't like or dress in a way that I don't want to. You know, whatever. You know, in order to be acceptable. You know, in order to be acceptable to the world around me. You know, I could be, and I was, the kind of person that just kind of would go, fuck you, I don't fucking care what you think about me. And I can act in a really fearless way, you know, and I did for a long time, you know. But there's a difference between the courage that I need to work the steps and to be honest, and a fearlessness, which means that I will physically, like, throw my body at someone in order to try and beat them up or whatever. You know, there's a massive difference between the, you know, fearlessness and courage, I think. Or the kind of fearlessness that I was talking about. And, like I said, you know, the process. The last year, I came here and did this a year ago, and the last year, so, you know, when I get asked to do this, then I think, okay, what's changed, what's happened? You know, I've managed to... people talk about their parents in NA, you know, and they kind of go, yeah, I've, you know, I've done the right thing by my parents, and I had a lot of shame about the fact that, you know, I couldn't even bear to be in the same room as my mum, you know. I actually, being with her, made me want to self-harm. I self-harmed when I was younger, and it actually made me want to cut myself because I couldn't stand to hear the way that she character assassinated people, which I indulge in, you know, myself. But I couldn't stand to hear what she had to say about other people. And... amazingly, you know, I've managed to find the words, very simple words, to be able to say to her, I can't hear what you've got to say anymore, you know, and for her to hear me and it not be a rejection, but for her to go and seek help in an appropriate place and not just kind of dump on me all the time, you know. But still, you know, be there for her because she needs me. You know, I can be a mum to my three kids, and sometimes that's really difficult. They're 17, 14, and 12 now, and I used to kind of go through this thing where I'd either think, I'm so great at this that I should write a book. Or, you know, literally a day later just going, I'm so shit at this, they need to be taken away from me. you know, and finding a middle ground and some balance has also, you know, has been part of the journey, and to kind of go, you know what, I don't do it right all the time. I probably swear too much and shout too much, and I'm probably a little bit, you know, too relaxed sometimes, but I just, you know, I just do what I can, you know, and when I'm in trouble, or when I feel tuning into kind of, you know, doing meditation and just feeling, you know, okay, what's God's will, you know, means that I do have a kind of a physical kind of feeling when, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is that the working the steps means that I have a choice. It means that if I get to a point where I just think this isn't right, what's going on, my reaction is too aggressive or too vicious or too, you know, it's out of proportion to what's going on, I can kind of look at the program and change the way that I do things, you know, and it gives me a choice. And, you know, I use what I've learnt in order to be able to be a decent enough parent for my kids. But it's like I said, you know, I don't find it easy at all. And I'm very tired at the moment. And I don't like being tired. You know, I'm on my own with them. I don't like being tired. I don't like feeling like I can't, you know, be the kind of the person that can support them in every way. But being in recovery means that I have to be honest and I have to ask for help when I need help. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look, you know, it's just about being honest. It's actually just about kind of going, this is how it is today. You know, like I said, I would love to kind of go, yeah, I've had like a really perfect recovery and I'm all sorted now. You know, and I do it every day, and, you know, but that's not true. I do what I can when I can, and I don't do it alone, like I said. And my relationship with the relationship with my sponsor means that I can't kind of hide from her, you know. When I was talking to her on the phone, and one of the things I wanted to do, one of the things that I realised in step four was that I needed to spend some time on my own out of a relationship. So I did that, you know. But then I wanted to be in a relationship, you know, a year later or something, and it just didn't happen. I got really frustrated, and then I called her just before Christmas and I said, you know what, it's happened. I'm actually finally happy. I'm single and I'm really happy, and that's just fantastic. And isn't it great? And she said, oh, I'm so happy for you, Alison. That's brilliant. You know, I called her 3 weeks later and said, you know, then, you know, I called her every week, whatever. And I was talking about a guy, you know, and she said, right, okay. And she said, you need to decide whether you want to be in a relationship or not. She said, because you keep saying you're happy not being in a relationship, and yet every time I talk to you, you're talking about another man. And, you know, I can hear that now today, you know. I can hear that from my sponsor. I don't want to react violently when she tells me the truth about how I'm behaving. You know, I can take it on and I can learn and I can change and I can grow. You know, and that's something, like I said, you know, I didn't want to happen before. You know, I wanted everything fixed. I wanted to know today that I was going to be all right for tomorrow and the next day until I, you know, die. You know, that's what I wanted to know. I wanted a result, you know, and I wasn't going to accept anything less. But as I said at the beginning, I only have to do a day at a time. That's all. That's my responsibility. It's a day at a time. My recovery a day at a time. Be nice to people a day at a time. Be kind, thoughtful, considerate. But I absolutely, you know, like I said, and like Simon said, you know, I couldn't do it on my own. I couldn't do it without the people who go to the meetings that I go to, did the service at the meetings, go to the ASC, and do service there. Gave me a hug when I went to meetings, made me a cup of tea, you know, made me feel welcome, called me, you know. Absolutely not, you know. And I so wanted to do this on my own, you know. I didn't want to be sitting here going, you know, it's not down to me. You know, I didn't want to be doing that. I wanted to do it on my own. But it's a real... How long have I got left?
5 minutes.
Okay. I don't... You know what? I don't even know what else I've got to say. I'm just really glad that... I almost feel like, you know, the whole... It could have just passed me by, you know? And I could have just ended up my dad, you know, like my dad, who died an alcoholic. I'm just really grateful. I'm really grateful to be able to have the opportunity to kind of get to know myself, get to like myself, be here, come here, do service, be part of life, you know? Be part of other people's lives, be able to have relationships with people, be able to relate to other people, be there for other people. It wasn't anything I was interested in before. I really hope, you know, that someone got something out of what I've shared tonight. I feel, I don't know, you know, someone asked you to do something like this, you know, I'd be lying if I said this wasn't going around in my head, you know, obsessively for, you know, the days before this. It just does, you know, and as much as I tried to hand it over, I kept taking my will back. Surprise, surprise. I'm just really grateful. If you're new, keep coming back. And I'm sorry if that sounds like a cliche, but, you know... It works if you work it. All right, thank you.